is Ruth Sager. I'm president of the National Federation of the Blind of the Senior Division. And I just want to take a minute because this week we've been sharing information. And I just wanted to say yesterday, Shelley and Judy talked about the National Federation of the Blind and different. So our division, my board and officers planned this retreat. So I just want you to know who they are for sure. So I'm Ruth Sager in Maryland, and I'm the president. Judy Sanders is from Minnesota. She's our first vice president. Robert Newman lives in Nebraska. He is our second vice president. Shelley Koppel is our secretary, and she's in South Carolina. And Diane McGeorge, Duncan Larson work as a team, and they are our treasurers, and they live in Colorado. And Wayne Marshall is our membership chairperson. And our board members are Jane Diekenshine from New Jersey and Glenn Crosby from Texas. So all of these people worked very hard to make this retreat a reality. What I'd like to propose at the break time, after your questions are answered, is those of you who have upcoming state conventions and those with senior events might like to share what's upcoming in your state. Not all states have senior divisions. I think there may be 16 that do. Some have senior groups or senior committees, or they're just starting out trying to form such a group. And then to follow that, if you've recently had a state convention and you've met and your senior group has done something, or you want to share something that occurred in your state, to share that with people. So that may give people a more broad idea of the different things that are happening within the Federation. So we could do that at break time, which is 2:00 Eastern time, after we answer any questions, if we have any. All right. So, Wayne, that's all the time of yours I wanted to take up, but I did want people to know who our board and our officers are in this division. So take it away.
All right, Ruth. Well, thanks for that. And welcome back, everyone, to day 4 of our 2020 Seniors Retreat. And today, for our cane travel portion of this session, we have with us a great person who's near and dear to me, Duncan Larson. Duncan is the Director of Senior Services at the Colorado Center for the Blind. She's been at the center for over, I'd say, 25 years. And before that, she was in Nebraska, and she's been working with blind and visually impaired people for well over 30 years, I'm sure. And Duncan also was my boss at the Colorado Center for the Blind in senior services, and also instructed me when I started in cane travel many years ago. And so, Duncan, it's great to have you here with us, and thanks for participating.
Well, thank you, Wayne. It's my pleasure to be here. I just wanted to start out by telling people a little bit about my experience with cane travel. As Wayne mentioned, I started out in Nebraska. I had training as a student in Nebraska for 3 months prior to becoming, really working as a staff member there. And I had the wonderful opportunity to have my cane travel instructor be Fred Schroeder. Now, not all of you know who he is, but some of you do. And he is a longtime leader in the National Federation of the Blind. He's held many high-level positions, including rehabilitation services. I'm going to mess this up, but he was appointed by President Clinton to run the rehab services for the country. So I learned so much from Fred. I am not blind, but my friends tell me I'm blind at heart. And during the 3 months and all the time since, I started in Nebraska in 1978, I have really developed a strong belief in the capabilities of blind people and the capability of myself using alternative techniques and using a cane. So I was also very happy to help Diane McGeorge start the Colorado Center for the Blind. Anyway, I know that some of what I'm scheduled to talk about you've already discussed, So I'll just start in, and some of this might be a bit of a repetition. I'm going to go for a while. I'm going to leave about 20 minutes for questions. So I'm going to talk about traveling outside. And the first thing on the list of things to talk about is shorelining. And I'm assuming that maybe that was described, what shorelining is. But I'm going to go ahead and repeat that. And maybe I'll just step back a little further and repeat what a correct and what we think of as the most effective cane technique is going to be for you to sweep your cane in an arc evenly in front of you so that it is a little wider than your shoulders on the left side, a little wider than your shoulders on the right side, so that it's very even and you clear your path. Now, with shorelining, that is the technique you want to use most of the time, even on both sides. With shorelining, you are going to widen your arc on one side. So, Liz, and I always instruct my students to use shorelining only when you're looking for something. So when you're talking about travel outside, you might be looking for an intersecting sidewalk, or you might be looking for a driveway. So let's say you are walking down the street on a sidewalk, and you want to find a sidewalk that goes off to the right to your friend's house. So what you would do is widen your arc just on the right side. And if you do that very consistently, you are going to find that intersecting sidewalk. So again, shorelining is widening an arc on one side to locate something specific. Once you locate that, I always recommend you go back to your regular arc. Sometimes beginners want to shoreline. They want to follow along a grass line when they're walking on a sidewalk. And so they're shorelining the grass line, and it does give a sense of security. But I believe that not shorelining will help you develop more confidence in yourself and more confidence in the information your cane can give you versus, you know, always walking along a grass line. Sometimes people want to shoreline a curb. Let's say they're walking along a sidewalk and there's a curb on one side. They want to keep shorelining that curb. Well, again, I think it's better not to do that, just to develop confidence. Also, there can be lots of changes in the curb. And so I really recommend as much as possible staying in the center of the sidewalk, having a regular arc. But it's okay as you're walking along. If you want to just verify, hey, I want to know exactly where that curb is. Let's say you're walking down the street. The curb's on your left. The grass is on the right. Every once in a while, you can, okay, let me make sure and see how far I am from that curb. Let me make sure and see how far I am from that grass line. So that's how I would instruct somebody to walk down a sidewalk. Now, you're going to also have situations where there's going to be grass on both sides. Again, I don't recommend shorelining it unless you're looking for something specific. So I already talked about some situations where you might want to find something specific outside. At our center, we walk along a sidewalk and we're looking for, we have the street on the right side and we are looking for an intersecting sidewalk on the left that will take us to the center. So that's where it would be an appropriate place to start shorelining on the left to find that intersecting sidewalk. And when you shoreline, you can increase your arc quite a bit, maybe increase it another 6 inches to really locate it. And You have to be very consistent with it. If you do a shoreline and then a regular arc for a couple steps and then another shoreline and then a regular arc for a couple of steps, you might end up missing what you're looking for. So again, be very, very consistent with that. I used to live in a home where somebody would have to come to my driveway. They would have to shoreline, find my driveway, walk up my driveway, and then find my sidewalk that would come off of my driveway to get to my front door. So that would be another situation where you might want to shoreline to find a particular driveway. I'll tell you a funny little story about myself. When I was in training, I thought I was being really smart to when I was going to the corner, I would start to shoreline and look for an intersecting sidewalk because I just wanted to go around the corner. But I would invariably find a sidewalk going to somebody's house instead of an intersecting sidewalk off the street. So you want to be really thoughtful about when you use your shorelining techniques. Let's see. Finding curbs is another thing. So when you're walking along and you want to find a curb right in front of you, I recommend you walk, you keep your sense of direction, you have a regular arc without shorelining, and that you are aware. The more you can be aware of what's everything that's around you, the better traveler you will become. So keep track of where the sun is. Keep track of if there is traffic that you can hear. Sometimes that traffic is off in a distance. Sometimes it's closer to you. I'm going to talk about residential street crossings first because that's often what people begin with. It's residential street crossings. The beginning traveler always thinks that residential street crossings are easiest. However, as you get more experience, you'll realize that traveling around traffic is actually easier. You have more cues, more traffic cues, more noise cues, more to go by than being in a residential area. So I'm going to give you an example of crossing a street. Let's say I'm walking south on a street. I have my traffic on the left side, my grass on the right side. I'm on the sidewalk. I walk ahead. I can hear some occasional traffic in front of me because this is residential, remember, and walk along, and I will find a curb in front of me. So to find a curb, you really have to have your arc very, very low. I learned this the hard way. When I was in training, I was tapping on both sides and I had my arc kind of high in the middle. So I couldn't really tell when I came to the curb. It didn't feel different to me. If you keep your arc really low, or even slide across, you're going to feel the tip of your cane dropping down off of the curb. And you will know that that's where your curb is. You can take the two or three steps to get right to the curb. So that would be the way to find a curb to cross a street. Now, sometimes there aren't curbs. Sometimes it's a slope down, especially in a busier area. In most residential areas, there will either be a curb or there will be a curb cut for wheelchairs. So you may need to feel for the sidewalk kind of veering down into the street if it is a curb cut. And sometimes there will be some texture you'll be able to feel that signifies that a curb that you're at an intersection. I like to have my students cross the street that they come to. So when you are walking, let's say you're walking south, You come to that curb or curb cut, you find it, you listen for traffic. This is very residential, so you may be able to come up, listen, and not hear any traffic. But you do want to take some time to listen and make sure that it's safe to cross. And you would keep your direction. So you're not going to, I don't want you to turn left, turn right. Just keep your direction to go across unless you hear traffic in front of you and you feel like you're at an angle to it. So you've probably already talked about this during the sessions, but the traffic that's going on our left is our parallel, in this case would be our parallel traffic. The traffic that's going on the street that we want to cross is the perpendicular traffic. So if you hear a car that's going perpendicular, you want to make sure that it's going right in front of your body so that you're not at an angle to it. You're not facing it at any kind of an angle. So you can listen for that. And it's always good to, especially if you're beginning to listen for that. When you feel that you are really lined up well and you don't hear any traffic, go ahead and cross. Now, most residential streets are not going to be very wide. It's a really good thing to have a good sense of how wide is a street to cross. Two lanes, have a good sense of how long or how far does it feel to cross two lanes of traffic, which is going to be most residential streets. And if you feel like you are walking and walking and walking, then that could be a situation where you maybe missed the curb on the other side and you need to go back and find the street or find the sidewalk. We can talk a little bit more about that. But let's say you made a perfect street crossing, you know, you crossed. You're going to find the curb or the curb cut on the other side. For a lot of beginning travelers and even people who aren't necessarily beginning travelers, we have a tendency sometimes to want to veer away from traffic. It is kind of a natural thing. So if you find yourself doing that, don't beat yourself up. It does happen. I think that was brought up yesterday that sometimes that happens. The most important thing is for you to be aware of, oh, okay, that probably happened and I need to go back and find my sidewalk. So that would be how to cross a residential street that's right in front of you. If you are crossing, let's say you're walking along a street and, you come to the corner and you don't want to cross the street that's in front of you. You want to cross the street that is right next to you, your parallel street. You would still want to come up and find the curb and then take a couple steps back and locate, you know, get lined up to cross. Let's say you're headed south. You want to cross going east, so you'd turn to the left and get lined up to cross. And it's really helpful then if you do have some parallel traffic to line up with, to cross parallel, to cross safely. So I didn't really talk about finding curbs after you get across the street. You will find a curb or a curb cut. Your cane will find, you know, if you've kept your cane low, your cane will find an object and you can bring your cane up a little bit. A curb is going to be, 5 inches or something. Know that that's the curb and you can go ahead and get up on it. So that would be for finding, for crossing residential streets. Again, if you have traffic, and there will be some traffic in the residential areas, use that as much as possible. And also, I want to mention, this is true for all crossings that you do, whether it's residential, whether it's a busier street crossing, you want to also use a sun cue. So let's say I'm lined up, I'm getting ready to cross the street. I feel the sun on the left side of my face. I feel it on my left forehead, on my left cheek. And I'm going to want to pay attention to that as well as other things while I'm crossing. So I want to keep feeling the sun in the same place. I like to tell people to use sun cues in a very simple way. So you feel it on your body, you keep it there. If you want to go that same direction, you keep it there. So when you're crossing a street, you're paying attention to the sun cue. You're paying attention to the information that your cane is giving you. You're paying attention to any traffic that might be happening in the area or any other environmental noise that you may have. And let's hope you don't have a whole lot of environmental noise while you're trying to cross a street, construction or whatever. So that would be for crossing residential streets. So let's go to crossing busier streets. Again, I want all of my students to get an idea of how wide a busier street would be. And you can have busier streets that are two lanes both ways that are lighted intersections. But you can also, of course, have much wider streets. You can have, four lanes, crossing four lanes. You can have, in Denver, we sometimes have 10 lanes. Those are really, really wide streets. And for those kinds of streets, I'm going to talk about crossing with a light. So, again, when I'm working with someone, I like to have them start with crossing a street that they've walked up to so they have a good sense of their direction. Let's say we're going north. And we have a street on our left side. Our parallel traffic is going to be right next to us. We're going to be able to hear that traffic stop for the light. There will be, as we walk up to the intersection, if it's busy, we're going to be able to hear traffic next to us going. We're going to be able to hear our perpendicular traffic in front of us. And again, walk up to the curb. Or if it's a really busy street, likely it's going to be a curb cut. And it could be rounded. It could be somewhat angled. But I'm going to tell you all this. I don't want you to line up your heels with curbs. I know people who have done that, and it has taken them across the street, across two streets when they only wanted to cross one. It takes you into traffic. So do not line your heels up with the curbs. I want you to walk up to the corner, keeping your sense of direction, paying attention to your sun. Let's say your sun is on the right side this time, keeping the sun in the same place, listening to traffic. So you've walked up to this intersection, and you can hear that there's traffic going both ways in front of you, your perpendicular traffic. You can really listen and hear how wide is that street. You may already know. You may have lived in the area and really know a lot about, how wide. Oh, that's a major street, so that's going to be four lanes, six lanes, whatever. But if you don't know that, you can walk up and you can listen to a few cycles of traffic and determine how far am I going to have to go to get across the street. The other thing you can listen to when you come to a busy intersection is how long is the light for my parallel traffic? Because you always want to cross a street with your parallel traffic. That's the traffic that's going the same direction you are going. So if it seems like, boy, this is a kind of a wide intersection, I'm not that fast of a walker, I'm not sure I can get across in time, you can find a crosswalk button, and sometimes that will give you more time to get across as a pedestrian. To find a pole with a crosswalk button, your cane can cover a wide area. So you can sweep your cane around you while you're standing at the corner to find that lighted pole where there hopefully is a crosswalk button, and push that and get some more time. And then you can gauge that. How long do you have? Do you think you have, you know, hopefully you have enough time to get across with that crosswalk button? When I say to sweep your cane, I mean keep your cane on the ground, but you can put it in an arc in a circle around you to find what's around you. You don't have it up in the air. Again, you need to keep it on the ground, but you can find a lot of things that way. We're at this intersection. There's traffic. Our perpendicular traffic is in front of us. Our parallel traffic is next to us. And we are listening for a surge of traffic that's going the same direction that we want to go. So let's say we are going north and we have traffic right next to us, and we want to go the same direction it's going. So we listen for that surge of traffic and go when the traffic goes. If you are unsure, if there's not enough traffic to go by, I would say wait and make sure. You know, I'm not saying to wait a half an hour or anything, but wait and make sure. You can also, as you get more skill, be able to listen to the perpendicular traffic in front of you stopping. That is going to be a little further away, perhaps, depending upon where you're crossing, but hopefully you will also be able to hear that. So when you get ready to cross, again, you want to use your sun cue. You want to listen to the parallel traffic the whole time you're crossing so that you're not going toward it or away from it, that you are going right next to it, kind of like a railroad track would be. Your parallel traffic's going, you're going right next to it and walking across. So, and again, having a sense of how far you think it will be to go across that intersection will be important. Let's see. Some other things, sometimes I just want to caution you, if you are crossing or when you are crossing, you don't want to get into a thing where you come to, let's say a car is a little bit in, tiny bit into the crosswalk. Generally, this is going to be a little bit individual, but you're going to want to go in front of that car. You don't want to get into a situation where you are weaving behind the car. That can be very dangerous. I did hear some questions yesterday about right-hand turners. So there are lots of situations where there will be right-hand turners. And you definitely, if you feel like that right-hand turner is just raring to go, you want to let them go. But you can be in charge of that too. If you want them to go before you cross, you can wave them on. You can give them the signal with your hand that you know that they're there and you want them to go. Sometimes that is a really good situation. Okay, so we've talked about residential street crossings. We've talked about busy intersection crossings. We've talked about listening for a surge in traffic and going with that parallel traffic. One of the other things that Wayne wanted me to talk about is entrances, finding entrances to places. So this varies depending upon what kind of an entrance you're going to be looking for. But let's say you are going to a coffee shop that you know is close to a corner of a street. You can go to that corner, go toward the building, and there are a few ways to find entrances. If there is an overhang for an entrance, like at our Colorado Center for the Blind, there's an overhang over our entrance, you're going to hear an echo from your cane that will signify that there is an awning. And that's true for a lot of businesses, but not all businesses. You can go to the building as well and Shoreline. Again, here you're looking for a specific thing, in this case, a doorway. So doors are generally going to sound very different when you hit them with your cane than a building is going to sound. Even at our center, where the outside is metal and glass and the door is metal, it has a different sound than the metal and glass portion of the building. Brick is going to have a totally different sound and feel than a metal door to the entrance of a business. Let's see, other kinds of entrances. If you are at a grocery store, you are going to be hearing people going in and out. That's a place where a lot of people are going in and out, and a lot of grocery stores, at least here in Colorado, have an open, the door is kind of open, so you'll hear noise coming from the inside. You'll hear people going in and out, so you'll know that that is an entrance. So I've talked about business entrances. Let's say you want to go to a business that you think, I don't know that you've talked about address locations, but you can kind of tell how far down a street a business is going to be by their address. So if you think it's going to be in the middle of the block, go, you know, like a third of the way down the block, and then go over and locate the building and Shoreline for a doorway. You can also, you know, if you find a doorway, you can open it up. If you're looking for a coffee shop, you can probably smell that coffee shop. If it's something else you're looking for, you can go in and ask if you've located what you wanted to locate. So again, shorelining to find something specific. I will tell you that if you are walking in a busy downtown area, there are going to be often a lot of things right by the curbs. So light poles. There used to be lots of newspaper stands. We don't have many newspapers anymore. But there may be other things, planters that can be close to the curb. And then this is all on concrete, and then a place to walk, and then the businesses on the other side. So I really recommend, if you're in a busy downtown area, that you're not walking right along the curb, because you're going to keep running into things that you're going to have to go around. It's just going to be frustrating. And you want travel to get you where you want to go, and to be fun. So also, I'm going to stop in just a minute, but I have something else I want to say about driveways and alleyways. So while you're walking along, if it's in any kind of an area, you could be walking past a driveway or past an alleyway. And unless you really want to go into that, you just want to keep walking. You want to keep your same sense of direction. Follow your sun cues. If it's at night, obviously you're not going to have a sun cue. But having a real sense of confidence within yourself that you are going a certain direction and you're going to keep going that direction can help you walk past a driveway or an alleyway that you don't want to walk into. And it's not a tragedy if you end up walking into an alley or a driveway. It just means that you need to assess where you're at and then adjust. So just giving you a few tips. And it is, I'm going to leave some time for questions if anybody has questions.
We have two questions, two people with their hands raised.
Okay.
Let me get to the person with the 470 area code. If you can unmute yourself. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes,
hello.
Go ahead. 470.
Hi, it's Wes from Georgia.
Hi, Wes.
No, Wes. L-E-S.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. I've been called worse.
Okay.
Maybe a little change of topic. I just got an email about a strap that you can put on your body, and it tells you where you're going. It tells you what's in front of you. my comment, it would tend to scare me because I no longer have a cane in my hand to tell me what is to the left or the right of me. And it would be like try to walk, unless it can really describe, do you know anything about this belt or strap that they're talking about? It's expensive, but I'm just curious.
You know, somebody asked me about this yesterday, and I don't have personal experience with it, but I will tell you that in all the time that I've been teaching travel, which has been a long time, there's been gadget after gadget after gadget where people, mostly sighted people, are trying to come up with, oh, these blind people need something to help them with travel, to tell them what's in front of them. I would say that there is absolutely no substitute for a cane, for a white cane, unless you are using a guide dog. And even then, you want to be able to use a cane well at a time when you are unable to use your guide dog, or at a time when, I don't want to get into the whole guide dog subject, but that, I feel that would be dangerous to be traveling without a cane and to have, be relying upon something to tell you. Because is it going to tell you, oh, there's a curb 2 feet in front of you? You want a cane to tell you where everything is, where the curbs are, where the steps are, when to turn the corner, all of that. And a cane is much more affordable than this thing you're talking about. So yeah. I will say that's really my thought is beware of anything like that. Keep using your cane.
Okay. One more quick question.
I'm very opinionated, I know.
One more quick question. Are they going to do anything about electric cars? They're good for some people, but us blind people hate them. I have a guide dog. At one time, we stopped at an intersection across, and my dog refused to move because the car was in front of it. And after 3 times of asking your dog to move, it does it. You take your cane out to find out what
it's
is
12:45
in front of
p.m.
you. I took my cane out, and all of a sudden, I hit a car. I thought it was shut off or parked there. Guy rolled down the window and said to me, "What are you, a blind fool?" I said, "Excuse me, sir. There's one blind guy here and one fool. You make the decision." I hate electric cars. Are they going to do something about that?
Yeah, you know, the National Federation of the Blind has a committee working on that, and I believe that, I don't remember, maybe somebody on the line knows what date all the electric cars are going to have a noisemaker on them. Do we have a year? There is a year when that has to happen. And I'm sorry, I don't have that.
Duncan, I don't know the year, but they are supposed to go into effect soon here where cars are supposed to emit a sound, you know, that it is a vehicle.
Right.
And so, Duncan, there's
okay.
Two things,
so it's coming.
Can you hear me?
Go ahead. Yes.
This is Winford Haynes. I guess I had my hand up before. I was just so... I really didn't have a question. I just had my hand up earlier to let you guys know I was in the meeting.
Okay. Well, welcome.
Yeah.
Who else?
Duncan.
Duncan.
Ruth Sager.
Yes.
I would like you to comment on, you're a sighted person. You've observed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of blind people over the years. And give some texture or some thought here so people can understand, because some people say, well, if I use a white cane, I'll be more vulnerable. And since you've observed people in all stages of learning as a sighted person, now, when you went through training, we should explain to people that Duncan had blindfolds on when she was doing her training.
But yes, I didn't exactly
you comment on that,
yes.
And your observation, because I think you might have some insight here for people.
Sure. So, yes, I have been working in the field since 1978. I've worked with, like she said, many people. I feel that I've never seen a blind person be more vulnerable with a cane. I've seen a blind person be very vulnerable if they are not using a cane. So sometimes people have some fear about, people are going to know I'm blind. But your cane is going to give you the power to travel and go where you want to go. I think that the vulnerability is when a person is in denial and doesn't use a long white cane. That is, you know, we just had White Cane Day, and it used to be called White Cane Safety Day when I first started, because the white cane helps make you safer as you go about your life, as you travel and do the things that you want to do and need to take care of. So yeah. I've never seen anyone be vulnerable and be targeted because of their white cane. Am I answering that, Ruth?
I think so, yeah. I think, because I think you're right, it does empower you to take much more control. And if you do have to leave a situation or, you know, move in a situation, you can move more safely, more effectively, efficiently with the cane and try and get away from the situation, if that's a possibility, than you can without a cane.
Absolutely. You would want to move away from a situation. You don't want to be without a cane and maybe trip off of a curb or run into something if you're trying to get away from something.
Okay, we got quite a few questions here. So, okay. Bill Borner, go ahead, okay. Sir.
Hi, Duncan. Great. It's been great this morning. I have a quick thought. When you get to the other side of that street and you've found the curb, I always like to remind people that make sure you sweep the surface of the sidewalk before you step up, because there could be a pole right there.
Oh, that's a really good point. Thank you for reminding me. Yes, you want to do that.
Trust me.
You always want to sweep the area that you are going to walk up on, you know, sweep that. Or if you're turning, sweep that area, because you don't want to turn into a pole. Thank you for reminding me of that, of course.
Carol.
Duncan, I wanted to address a couple of things that you mentioned.
Okay.
One is you mentioned when you're crossing a street and maybe it's a residential street, and if you're walking quite a ways and you haven't reached the other side of that street yet.
Right.
I think it's right. And it's pretty, if you know that traffic is on your right side, I would start to veer to my left
yes.
to get out of traffic if I think I may be in traffic, because you're going quite a while and you have not connected to the other side of the street.
Yes, you're right.
That's one. And then you also mentioned not shorelining the curb, just, you know, so you don't just get into that habit. But the consequence of that habit would be finding yourself following that curb, which could lead to a driveway, which could lead you, and, you know, driveways lead you to the street. And so you could find yourself following a curb right into the street. And so that's another reason not to just shoreline the curb.
Carol, yeah, another question. Sorry, go ahead.
And you would, again, want to be using your traffic cues and your sun cues so that, you know, that wouldn't happen.
That doesn't happen. Yep.
Right. Thank you, Wayne.
Okay, we have a question from Carol.
Okay, I have a comment about being targeted. That was one of my fears back in the late 90s when I got my training. And I got my training at a non-NFB center. The San Diego Center for the Blind, but there were NFB folks on the staff who used guide dogs. And when I first started, I was very worried about being targeted. And I think my advice to people, if you can possibly get around other people who are using canes competently, that's what sold me on getting the cane training. I saw people who were had a lot worse vision than I did at this traditional training center, who had the freedom I wanted. And so, you know, I fairly quickly got over that fear of being targeted. The other thing was, I was only 47 and I didn't want to look like an old lady. Which is a vanity thing, but anyway, I know a whole lot of pretty old ladies now. Anyway, I just wanted to know about the use of what they call an ID cane. I know that the NFB doesn't recommend this very often, has been my experience. But when I was traveling with a guide dog, I kept one with me because I could get in situations, and it was just a tool I could use to see if I was at a puddle or a lake or something. But even now, I'm finding myself thinking about purchasing a long one. I use a 59-inch NFB cane just in case someone runs over my cane when I'm at a waiting to cross. I think have y'all got any comments about that?
I think it's really a good idea to have a spare cane with you. I think we talked a little bit about that yesterday. That can happen. A cane doesn't survive being run over. That's the other thing I didn't mention. When you are standing at a corner listening to traffic, especially on busy intersections, have your cane up with you on top of the curb or the curb cut. Don't have it out while you're waiting because it could get run over, and I've seen that happen. And then you have a disabled cane that you're using. So it's really good to have an extra cane, whether you have a guide dog, whether you're using a cane, entirely. Some people that I've worked with start out with getting a white cane to identify themselves as blind people. And I think that, you know, the sooner we can get a cane in somebody's hand, the better. And hopefully they'll start using it more than just identification.
Okay, we're Colorado with the 4268.
Okay.
Hi, I bet Duncan knows that.
Hi,
number.
Yes.
This is Diane. I've just enjoyed all of these speakers this week. I wasn't here yesterday, but I've been here the other days. And of course, Duncan and I are longtime wonderful friends. And she says, I have been primarily a guide dog user, and she was very helpful to me then, as well as now I use a cane. I do not, my balance is terrible, so I really am not traveling independently anymore. But I still want that cane in my hand. I don't want to be depending on the person who is, if I have a hold of their arm. You know, really, they think they're helpful, but many times they're not. And so don't give up the independence of a cane. Or if you're a guide dog user, don't give up that independence. Don't relinquish that to some sighted person. The other thing, Duncan, I would like you to comment on is how helpful a cane is when you are using a guide dog.
Well, okay. So a cane is, so here's the difference between, in my mind, between using a cane and a guide dog. The similarities is that they are both effective tools for independent travel. The difference is that a cane is set up to find obstacles and then you go around them, or to find curbs or whatever, and you you adjust. And a dog is trained to go around obstacles. So let's say you are you're wanting to find a bus bench or a bus stop. The dog is trained to go around unless you specifically show that dog that bus stop. So that would be a good time to take out a cane, locate the bus bench so that you know where it is, because that dog is going to consistently go around it. A cane, again, having a cane with you as a guide dog user is something you can do to find particular things you're looking for that the dog will go around.
Okay.
And then, of course, if the dog gets sick, or if, you know, there may be other factors that make you want to use a cane rather than a dog on a particular day. So did that answer that, Diane?
Well, I had to mute her to move on here. We're just about out of time. One more question from Vincent in New Jersey.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon. Just a quick comment. I avoid revolving doors, especially the automatic ones. Gotten crushed by them a couple of times, and my cane has gotten caught also, so I always avoid them. And the second one concerns travel. Up until the beginning of this year, I used to travel quite a bit, and I have gotten terribly lost. I didn't use an app or anything. For example, I've gotten terribly lost in several cities in this country and other countries as well. So what are the apps that you would suggest when traveling abroad, well, traveling to a city that is unknown? Any apps, any app recommendation?
I'm going to ask some of my colleagues to answer that, because I'm really low tech. I'm all about, you know, using a cane, asking questions. I know that phones will have GPS on them. On an iPhone, you can get some information that way. Maybe I can defer to Wayne on that question.
Allison, this Robert Wilkerson right here.
Sure. On apps.
Apps are okay, but dealing with technology, you got to worry about the apps crashing. And, you know, sometimes it's not picking up the accurate location due to buildings might be blocking the GPS from the sky and stuff. So one good app I know that tells you, you know, and I still wouldn't rely on this while traveling, but say you somewhere and you're just trying to pick up some information, Blind Square is a good app because it tells you all the street, the parallel and perpendicular streets. It lets you know, like, streets that you're coming up to. So if you just confused and you somewhere, you can stop for a second. But like I said, I wouldn't require this while you're moving, trying to listen to an app and travel. So because you won't get all the information that your cane is telling you. But Blind Square is a good app that lets you know, you know, you can see all the cross streets and tell you address, locations and stuff. But there's a lot of apps out there. You just have to use the one. You just have to use the ones that work for you. But like I say, just knowing, like keeping the sun and knowing streets you're traveling, you know, and your line of travel. Just, if you get disoriented, like Duncan said, it's always good to ask questions and stuff. But just relying on technology and stuff, it's cool. Even stoplights. It might be an outage at a stoplight. And if you don't know how to cross without using the crossing signals, you know, you can be in a situation. So you just have to learn to just trust yourself and be one with the cane and build that confidence and knowing, like, if you lost, it's okay, you know, because we take getting lost as a cane traveling instructor. You know, you find in new areas and exploring. So we don't just say it's lost because you know the name of the city you're in. So you're not lost. You're just a little disoriented.
I want to thank everybody, and I want you to remember that confidence is the most important thing. So you can have all these tools, but using a cane well and having confidence is the most important thing to become a successful traveler. Thank you.